Hi there. Welcome to the New Life Live podcast. Steve here. And since 1988, New Life has been transforming lives one life at a time. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's most hard, difficult places. One way we do this is through the live program that we share with our listeners here on this podcast. Now, you'll get to listen to callers bringing us their challenges, and our panel of counselors and psychologists provide insight, which you will learn from too.
Hello, everybody. It's Becky Brown, and I am so glad that you are with us today. I am with Dr. Alice Benton and Chris Williams. Hello,
hi,
you guys.
Hi, Becky.
Hey, good to be with you guys, as always.
Yep.
Sure. Well, you know, it's Friday, and we're always excited about Fridays, but this Sunday is Mother's Day. So if you haven't bought your card or flowers or whatever your plan is, that might be a good thing. But, you know, Mother's Day can also be pretty painful. Mm-hmm. I know one of my very best friends struggled for years with Mother's Day for many different reasons. Her mom was a good mom, but she was really sick most of her life. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't have the storybook mom. You know, I'm sure, you know, you guys have heard the saying, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. Mm-hmm. I'm a mom. I got a mom. All that kind of stuff. That relationship can be so tricky. What would you say to somebody who is thinking about Mother's Day and not in such a great thought process, like, you know, whether it's past hurt or whatever?
And we may participate in Mother's Day by intentionally grieving what we didn't have. And that sometimes is a way to honor the role that our mother had, even if it was a painful role in our lives. Or perhaps our focus is on the motherly people that have been in our life, the spiritual mothers that mm-hmm. God brought into us.
Yeah, I think that's really good, because each and every one of us in our DNA, we carry our parents, literally. Mm. And so it's in us. And also in us is this desire and need for the ideal mom and dad. And mm-hmm. so that is in us, and that's even espoused in our, you know, in our world today, in our culture today, for sure. It's like, oh, a mom should be this, a dad should be that, and you have this, and then your life will be hunky-dory. But lo and behold, we carry the ideal, but then the real people show mm-hmm. up. There will always be a gap between the real and the ideal. Mm. And part of our work is to reconcile that. And I love what you said, Alice, is that for some of us who have had painful, real experiences with the real mom in our life, we look for other mothers that have been that guide and that strength and that nurturer and provided some of that in our life, and we honor them. But mm-hmm. like you said... the other part of that too is that there's those, you know, fathers and mothers, there's those women who maybe infertility is their story. Mm-hmm. And this mm-hmm. is just, or loss. This is yeah. just a reminder of that. And so right. can you get into relationships today or this weekend that care for you in your grief, care for mm-hmm. you in your sorrow?
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you guys is, you know, how do you navigate on that day? And I love that concept, too. Infertility is a big loss for a lot of moms who, you know, weren't able to have children. And so Mother's Day is a reminder of that. How do they navigate? What are some maybe simple steps for that day? I know it's a bigger question than that, but just let's go there.
Well, we process grief by talking about it in a healthy environment with a caring person who's willing to listen to us without fixing us. I'll be grieving the loss of my mom, who died about 5 years ago now. Mm. And so I might pull some pictures out, tell some stories, think about both the good that I had with her and the sorrow that I don't have her anymore.
Mm. I think a huge part of that is care, 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 care. Let's care for our moms. Let's care for the women in our lives this weekend. And I get the picture of Jesus when he's walking into Jerusalem in that last week. And he uses a very, very motherly picture. He sees the lostness and the hurt of Jerusalem. And he says, oh, how I've longed to gather you yeah. under my wings like a hen her chicks. Mm. We need care. And so, again, it comes back to Mother's Day is about honoring the women in our life mm-hmm. through care.
I love that.
Through care.
I love that. And we'll be back after this with your calls.
find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, we have a counselor network, and so if there is an issue with your mom or past or future, whatever, you know, you can give us a call and we'll get you connected to one of our coaches or counselors across the country. Right now, we are going to go to the calls. We're going to talk with Doris, who's listening on the internet and is calling from Boston. And we're so glad you called. Doris, how can we help you?
Thank you very much for taking my call. I listen to you as often as I can. I feel you're very helpful. The reason I'm calling is I'm a grandmother to a girl whose mother is, I feel, very abusive to her, very verbally abusive, and has been basically much of her life. But she's now 26 years old, and she's still seeking the approval of her mom, and her mom just can't give it. She's really the only, and I don't get involved because my granddaughter really defends her mom. So I don't try to get involved. I just want to know how I could be supportive of her. Her mom will do things like texting. She'll threaten that she's going to text her friends about how bad she is. She's going to text her landlord. She's going to. It's very, very hurtful to her. But she needs her mom. She needs to know that her mom is still there and is still helpful. And actually, her mom can be very helpful to her too. That's what makes it so confusing. Mm-hmm. She can advise her on things, and it's just a very difficult relationship.
So if you it is, ideas, and you. Well, we'll try and help you. Doris, I'm a grandma too, and it would break my heart if that was going on, and I'm so grateful that you called. Why don't you start?
She does have two other sisters, but she only picks on this oldest one. Her two sisters are twins, and they're just like 27 months apart.
Well, and Doris, I think that I started the show with talking about, we have this idea of this ideal mom, and we want that so bad to be the mom that shows up. But for some of us, that's just not the case. And I think that helping her understand and see that being mistreated, being verbally abused is not okay. It's okay to call out that truth. And I think it's important to call out that truth. But then you also can provide her the alternative. Here is what a loving mom sounds like and looks like. And it sounds like that's exactly what you've been doing. And so, and so keep doing that. And you have to play, again, I talk about this all the time, you have to play the long game, not the short game on this. But I want this to be a point of awareness for all of us, especially our listeners out there, is that oftentimes what keeps us connected to harmful and abusive relationships is that one morsel of goodness that we get out of it. And that provides this hook. And because at the end of the day, what that is a zero-sum scarcity view of connection and love and support. If a little bit is there, well, it's better than nothing. Well, that's how abusive people work. I will give you a little bit just to keep you in long enough so I can keep abusing you.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I never thought of that.
And so I always talk about this. The problem isn't the abuse, because if that's really recognized for what it is, we can separate from that, hopefully, with a good support and plan. The problem is that one morsel of goodness that we think is going to do it for us, but it's in a package of abuse, and we got to just leave the package alone.
That's great. Alice?
Doris, is it your daughter that's mistreating her, or is that your daughter-in-law?
No, it's my daughter-in-law. And I have to say, I mean, I have a little bit of, concern for her, too, because, I mean, I know she's had it hard at her, and she was one of nine kids. I don't think she got a whole lot of attention, and I think her father was a little difficult with her, so I can understand a little bit about why she is like the way she is. But I do think she also has some kind of a mental problem going on. I don't know what to call it, but whatever.
Doris, is your son involved in your granddaughter's life?
Yeah. Yes, he is, and he tries to give his daughter the best, you know, whatever he can to help her. But, you know, the thing is that he cannot control his wife, and she does not want to go for therapy. I think the daughter is going for some therapy, but she doesn't open up about that too much to me.
So I'll add on just a couple of other suggestions to what Chris has already said. If you have any level of relationship with your daughter-in-law, check with God if you're being nudged to share a little bit of truth with your daughter-in-law. Now, that's a pretty risky thing to do from a mother-in-law to a daughter-in-law, but it's also loving.
Well,
go ahead.
I actually have done it, because when she gets me involved, I am very, very open with her and tell her that I think she's doing the wrong thing. And I really do point out whatever the situation has been. I tell her what I really feel, because if she gets me involved, I'm okay about telling her what I think. And actually, I think we have enough of a relationship so that she's one of these people that has a little respect for older people, and she'll listen to me. But, you know,
that's awesome.
Doesn't change things.
Well,
doesn't change things.
Well, that's really good news, because, Doris, I don't want you to speak to her from your daughter-in-law's poor parenting or bad behavior.
Right.
I want you to speak to her from the damage you see being done to your granddaughter.
Right.
To see if she can find that empathy inside of her to be like, oh, man, this girl is really hurting, and I may be causing that hurt. Not from a bad behavior, but from the impact it's having on the your granddaughter.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's such a sad situation. And Doris, it's great that you are calling to ask about this. I think what we'll do is we'll send her a copy of How We Love, because I think that if mom, daughter-in-law, and even daughter can understand what is the disconnect, I think that they could get forward in this, but there's a lot to this reactivity, and it's a really difficult situation, but we're glad you called.
Becky, we sometimes have family members come together to one of our New Life weekends, so I have this little dream image of Doris and her granddaughter coming to our emotional freedom, or participating in our emotional freedom weekend online. There can be family generational healing if one person is willing to put out that invitation.
Well, even the daughter-in-law, too. We could have her come as well. Okay, well, we are going to go back to the calls. And Lori, we're talking with you from Louisville, and you listen on the internet as well. We're glad you called. How can we help you today?
Hi. First, I just wanted to thank you all. I had called a couple weeks back about my 33-year-old daughter who's bipolar and wasn't taking her medication. And you sent me a book that has helped tremendously.
Oh, great.
You know, we had been dealing with this since she was 14 years old, and so I had forgotten a lot of things, and that book reminded me of so many different things, and I was able to approach some topics that we weren't able to talk about, and so she did go to her doctor, she did talk to her doctor, and she's trying a new medication.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yes, yes, yes.
And, you know, I know lithium is very hard on the body, and so, you know, she was willing to try something different, and so we'll... Of course, we don't know if it works yet, because it takes longer than, you know, just a week to know, but she's willing to do it. And so I wanted to thank you guys. That was wonderful.
Well, what was the book?
And then How to Love Someone with Bipolar,
okay,
I believe.
Our wellness book, you know, the Otterburn Wellness Series, it is such a rich resource. And I'm sorry, I got to plug it because of your story. So you can go to our website and find that resource there, because we have things for anxiety, addiction, depression. There's, you know, what do we do when we're in close relationship with people who are really struggling here, and it gets very confusing and overwhelming. So check out the Otterburn Wellness Series there.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, Lori, how can we help you today?
Well, on your last show, I had heard Patrick's call. I called the second half of it because I was in the store. And it got me thinking, you know, because I'm a widow. My husband died of cancer in December 2018. Mm. And, you know, I occupy my time taking care of my youngest grandson who's got autism. But I'm lonely. I'm really lonely. And, you know, Patrick was talking about how his wife left him because he's too religious. And that's exactly what I want. Somebody that is so religious, because that's how I spend my time. I spend my time reading the Bible. I spend my time reading other, you know, religious books and listening to all the different shows. And I don't know how to do that, you know.
You don't know how to connect with somebody that's like that?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I'm 63 years old. I'm not going to be going out to, you know, wherever right. you meet somebody. And, you know, many places that I had gone out as a younger person, I certainly wouldn't meet a religious
right.
person there.
Right. Well, so
I don't know. What do you do?
Well, Chris, Alice, how would you direct Lori in this pursuit?
Well, Lori, I'd first tell you that I don't know. So, but I think that I would, if I'm in your situation, I'd do some research. And part of that research would be like, is there a Christian widows, widower network out there? Is there a place where I can put myself in the way of other men who are pursuing God in a similar way that I'm pursuing God? Mm-hmm. Am I putting myself in situations where I can begin conversations? And then just, again, there may be out. There's these networks for everything, it seems like, these days. So I'm getting online and I'm using that Google to my advantage. And I'm saying, I'm punching that in and saying, you know, Widower's Network, you know, Christian Widower's Networks for Connection or whatever the case may be.
That would be a good start.
Lori, a lot of churches offer singles groups for all different ages or different activity groups. And so get connected with a local church. Get in person with other Christians. As we increase our exposure to Christian men, the likelihood is so much higher that we'll meet a couple of people that we might be interested in. It's that idea that if we stay at home waiting, hoping and praying that God sends someone to us, we're probably just going to keep on waiting. And God tends to want us to get active, to take the first steps, and then he meets us as we get into motion. We have a fabulous book, How to Get a Date Worth Keeping, and it sets out some dating challenges, some ways to increase that exposure to other people. There's simple ways to do it. There's some more complex ways of doing it. But increasing the exposure makes that likelihood so much higher.
Well, and we'll send it to you, Lori. We will send it to you. And I think the other part of that, too, is that you want to continue developing your life. I love that you said, Chris, you didn't know how to do this, but the challenge always is, how do I stay active in my life and at the same time be open to new relationships? And so to Alice's point, Lori, you can't stay home, even though I know you're helping with your grandson, which is great, but it could be that, okay, if I want to be connected with somebody, this has got to be like a task, literally. That's what Henry talks about in How to Get a Date Worth Keeping. He talks about having, you know, first dates, not with the intention of getting married, because that's what we hear about all the time, is people will go too quickly into relationship because they think, oh, they love Jesus, they love me, let's get married. And then, you know, they eat wedding cake and it's all disastrous. So you've got some work to do ahead of you.
And Becky, we have to be cautious if we're dating with the main motivator being loneliness. Because,
yes.
Lori, that's what gets us into impulsive decision-making in relationship, because we want to fill that space quickly. It's best to fill it with other safe women first, who
that's
will be
good.
A foundation
really
from which we then try to get that date worth keeping.
That's very good. Lori, we are going to send you that book. And, you know, if this story resonates with you, you know, maybe you need that book as well. And like Chris said, we've got the Arterburn Wellness Series. You can go to newlife.com and you're going to see all kinds of things in the store that could help you or help someone that you love. You know, you couldn't probably get it by Mother's Day since it's Friday, but, you know, it could be, you know, hey, I'm going to get this for you. Be careful, though, what kind of book you get your mom. It just could be tricky. But we're going to continue taking calls. We're going to talk with Kim after the break.
We're so glad you're here, and we are here for you. We'll be right back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We would love to hear from you, and we always love to hear from you, but you never know when the time is right. But listen, we're here for you all the time. You can give us a call at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or you can go to newlife.com. We've got great resources there. You can listen to us anytime, either on the podcast, the internet. You can go to YouTube. We love our family. Wherever you are listening, we are so grateful for you to tune in. And we are right now, we're going to talk with Kim, who's listening on a great station at WAVA in Tidewater, Virginia. We're glad you called, Kim. How can we help you today?
Yes, the other day I was listening to your program, and I heard this gentleman say that he had relational wholeness. And I never, or maybe one of the counselors said something about relational wholeness. I had never heard that term before, but when I thought to myself, I feel like I don't think I have that, because when I grew up in my home, I never really had any bonded relationships with the people in my family, not my mother, my father, my sister, my brother. I felt like I was an orphan, really. I just wasn't connected. I never learned to bond with my family, and as a result, I feel like I have a hard time bonding with people outside of my family. I have trouble forming friendships that are authentic. You know, I reach out to people, I feel like they don't reciprocate. Mm. I'm just really, you know, feeling kind of isolated most times. And I ran across this article that had this description of a fatal flaw. And this is what it says. It said, a deep-seated feeling that something is wrong with you. You're missing something that other people have. You are living life on the outside, looking in. You don't quite fit anywhere. And I said, that's the way I feel. That's the way I feel in life.
Okay, so Kim, here we go. I want you to take a deep breath.
Yes.
I want you to notice your body between your chin and your belly button as if there was a center line or a thread connecting your chin to your belly button on the inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about growing up in that disconnected, lonely, not belonging place, what do you physically feel in that place along that thread?
I feel a swelling in my chest.
Okay. Stay with that swelling in your chest. If that swelling in your chest had a statement about you, it would say, I am what?
I am... flawed.
Yeah. And because you are flawed, then what? Because I'm flawed, people will fill in the blank.
Not accept me?
Okay. Now there's a question mark at the end of that, which is okay. Let's see if there's a period at the end of that sentence. I am deeply flawed, so people can't accept me. Now, I change the language a little bit, but does that fit?
Yeah, I think it does. It's something else I'm trying to bring forward, but I can't quite get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The core of what you're experiencing, Kim, is the result of a lot of our childhood wounds, and it's called shame. Mm-hmm. It's that these people that were originally designed to help me, we talked about the ideal versus the real, that love me, guide me, know me, connect deeply with me, light up when I walk in the room, enjoy being around me, and guide me in both my strengths and my weaknesses, simply were not there. And what they did for you is they offered you a very painful blank piece of paper to write your own story on.
Mm-hmm.
And that story was a painful one.
Yeah.
Right? These people don't want to be with me because there is something deeply wrong with me, even though I can't really identify what that is because they never told me and no one else did. And so you walk into the world with this thing called relational fear and ambiguity. Like, I don't know what it is that's going to go wrong, but something's going to go wrong. And it's going, and it's always going to be pointing back to me.
And I'm going to be abandoned.
Yes, yes, yes. This is, Kim, this is the pain of our abandonment wounds. It really is. It is a big deal. Because my heart breaks for you because I can hear it in you. It's like, oh, my goodness, the world is missing out on the wonder of Kim. And it's not fair for the rest of us.
I like that.
It's just not fair. Right?
Thank you.
Because you are wonderfully, fearfully, beautifully created, and unfortunately the people in your life that were designed to reflect that back to you couldn't do it for whatever reason.
They couldn't.
Yeah.
They had their own issues. My mother was sick all the time.
Yeah.
My dad came from a very dysfunctional home. Mm. Both of them came from, and I don't fault them. I've given them. I work through it, but it's just something I can't get a breakthrough in because it's constantly I'm feeling like I can't connect with people. But I feel like, you know, it has its perks because I'm very connected to God.
It does have its perks. Yes. Yes. But pain is a great driver. Pain and fear are a great driver to God. Yeah. But we want to help you get that breakthrough. You're hearing the music now. And so when we come back from the break, we will help you walk into some things that can break through that fear and that pain of abandonment to go into what you're really there. God sparked something in you when you heard relational wholeness, because that is truly His will for your life. And so we want to partner with you on that will.
We are so glad that you called, Kim, and we'll be right back after this break.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We've been talking with Kim, who is curious about relational wholeness and found out that it really applies to her so deeply. And Chris has given you some really good insights. But let's go back. Chris or Alice, how would we help Kim understand this and move forward?
Kim, I want to point out what just happened between you and Chris, because you just got a taste of relational wholeness. And the way you got that taste was by risking. You called us and you opened up about your story. You revealed a little bit about yourself. And then you and Chris went back and forth, and he made a deposit in relationship with you by both acknowledging your pain and pointing out that you're an endearing person and you're worth knowing. And you received that from him. And it's by those deposits and risks and revelations over and over again that we start to actually develop a soul connection with other people. And so what we want for you is to repeat in more prolonged ways what just happened on this call. And we do that through identifying people that are safe to do this very thing with again and again and again. Sometimes it has to be with a professional, because our people picker might be broken, because we haven't learned who's safe. How do you even identify a safe person? Because the people in your life haven't been safe up to this point. At least some of them weren't. So it might start with a counselor from our network that we've vetted. And then it will probably also involve group work, because that's where we learn to build relational wholeness by both identifying our attachment style. You might be an avoider because people are too risky. And we start to build secure attachment by doing those things you just did with Chris. And then we experience the delight of relationship.
I love that. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Kim. You helped a lot of people by reaching out to us. Alice, what book should we send her?
We want to send Safe People, because it helps you figure out who to do this with.
Mm-hmm. That's really good.
That's awesome. You know, it is, we're all learning together, and we've got some growth to learn about, and sometimes it's through another person's call, and sometimes it's something we read. And Kim, you had all of that going on. We've been around for a long time. We have a matching gift campaign going on right now, and that's how we stay around for a long time. We have some great donors that said, you know what, we want to start a matching gift campaign. We're going to start with a seed of $325,000. So that means that every gift that you give will be doubled until we meet that match. It'll mean that people like Kim, people who call in, will continue to get the help and the healing that they need. You know, we can't thank you enough for being a donor, but we could thank you if you became a donor. So I would just encourage you, a double gift like this, you know, a matching gift can make all the difference. So maybe today is the day. You can go to newlife.com. You can call us 1-800-NEW-LIFE. To give, and just know that it is changing people's lives. We hear about those testimonies every single day. And now we're going to go to a call where we had with John and Henry years ago. I think, Terry, you got that queued up.
Marcy from Monroe, Louisiana. Hello, Marcy. Welcome to New Life Live. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, and we're glad you're with us. How can we help?
I have a situation with my mom and my children.
Okay.
We had expressed that we had some specific rules about what she could and could not do, and she broke those rules, and so I'm
really
trying to figure out how to handle that.
What were the rules?
That we didn't want her driving our children all around, and so one specific day I was out of town and she was keeping the children for me. My husband was in town, so she came to the house and kept the children, and part of the day I'd asked her if she would take them to go get their hair cut, and then after that, that she could meet my stepdad and they could go eat lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then later that afternoon, I found out that she had also taken them back to her house, which we've said they're not allowed to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then she also took them over to a friend of hers' house, and we don't know anything about that house or the safety of that house.
So what's the problem with her?
Well, my stepdad has been part of our lives for about 15 years. My dad died, and he is very abusive. He's a recovering alcoholic, so I grew up in a very verbal, abusive home. He also hit me and hit my mother numerous times.
Mm.
So even though he's sober and clean, he still has those abusive tendencies, and they're my children, and I want to protect them from his rage, which
okay.
he still exhibits from time to time.
Okay, so what's the question for us then?
How do I handle this situation? I've talked to her about it and told her that it was not okay, and she said, oh, I assumed that things had changed, and so I explained to her, you know, the rules don't change unless we've talked about them and said
now,
they
did she do it after that, after you had that conversation, or has that been the last talk?
Right, that was the last time we talked, as I explained to her that it was not okay what she did.
You know, I got a little rule around my house. Break the rules, and the privileges that you had before you broke the rules go away.
Mm-hmm.
How about that rule for your mommy?
That sounds good. She's already asking when she can pick them up again.
So none. Never. Until things are different.
Until things are different.
Come on over, though. Hey, let's come over and let's have lunch with the kids and have a tea party and have some fun.
And I think it would be very important to separate those two. What you want to tell her is, I want the kids to have a relationship with you. I want them to know and love their grandparents, and I want the grandparents to know and love them. However, I just need to make sure that they are safe, and then when I entrust them to someone, that you know my wishes happen. Right? And so since I can't trust you to do that, then I know that everything will be okay if we all meet at our house. So it's not about having a relationship. It's about having, you know, you watch them by yourself. That's what I can't do.
And then if there's some kind of flack from her, you may have to do this thing where you go, whoa. We're not talking about your relationship with me. We're not talking about all this. These are my children. And that's what we're talking about. And there's an unsafe person here, and that's all I'm talking about. An unsafe person. You wouldn't have subjected me to the man you're living with. You'd have protected me from that, Mom, and that's what I'm doing for my kids. Sorry.
Well, she didn't protect me from him, and therefore she doesn't see that he's
okay, then that's what you say. You didn't protect me from him. I still love you. I still want you to have a relationship.
And if you change, you'll see the kids in other settings. But, Mom, you haven't shown yourself to be safe in the way that I need it. There's really no argument about this.
Okay,
that's doable.
All right, be passive about your career or whatever. Don't be passive about your kids.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a Bible verse that talks about this, Marcy. Psalm 101. I want you to get that and print it out, put it in your refrigerator, and it talks about how I'm not going to allow unrighteousness to enter my home. I'm not going to allow deception around me and faithlessness. And those are some of the stances you have to take to say, that thing, those kids in there under that roof are my responsibility and guardianship, and I won't let stuff get to them. Yeah. And everybody needs to protect their family and their kids.
Now, Henry, with your little girls, did you hit this point that I did with Madeline where I wake up one day and I go, wow, this is weird. My job is to get this girl out of childhood without being molested. I can't assume that it is a safe world. And, and so, you know, spend the night with another child. There were two families that I would trust her with, two men. It was the dads that I would trust her with. Otherwise, I just didn't let it happen because I didn't know what was going to happen. It's a tough reality, but you got to embrace it and deal with it.
Yeah, and you know what? There's two sides to that, too. One of those is the actual, you know, protection that you can do for your child, watching who they're with and where they go and all that. And the other side of it is equipping them, you know, to protect themselves. And I think parents need to think about both, you know, because you're not there all the time, you know.
I said to Madeline one day, I said, Madeline, now if some man grabs you, what do you do? Kick him between the legs. I said, no. You run. She says, well, what if I can't run? I said, well, then you can use the kicking.
You know what? I heard a news story about a week ago or so, but there were a couple of kids in the, like, 8-year-old, 10-year-old range, and they're walking home from school, and, like, a van pulled up and tried to grab one of them. And she got away by, she actually took her ballpoint pen and stabbed the guy right in the cheek.
Don't you love
that? Or she would be gone. Yeah,
I
was cheering. Wow. Or she would be gone.
Absolutely.
Wow. You know, and I think it is important to equip kids.
Another thing on the other side is one of the stupidest things you
not
can.
That's the first option. You want to run.
Right.
But, you know.
The dumbest thing you can do is tell your kids, don't talk to strangers. Well, then they're going to be afraid of everybody. You do talk to strangers. You're nice to people. You just don't connect yourself with people that you feel creepy about, that you're unsafe with. Like, you know, even you guys. I tell Madeline, be careful. I think it's really...
That's why she hasn't spoken to me for a while, huh?
I've got a friend who, when she was like 2.5 years old or so, her whole family went to the Rose Parade, and she got lost, got separated from the family. And, you know, the thing went on, like, the better part of the day. And finally, they were somehow found a policeman that had heard that a child had been found or something. And they went over there. But what had happened was she'd been taught not to talk to strangers.
Oh.
She couldn't tell the police her name, you know, who she was with anything. And so,
Unless they have a badge.
We will be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I just want to mention that Every Man's Battle is online tomorrow, and there is still time that if you register by 7 p.m. Central Time today, you can get in, and it may be the best Mother's Day present you give your spouse, you know, to do the work. So we hope that you will join us that day. We're going to go to our final caller, and it's Erica. She's calling us from New York, New York, listens on the internet. Hello, Erica. How can we help you today?
Hi, so I submitted a question. I don't know if I need to repeat the question again.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us why you're calling.
So, I'm in a tough situation right now. So I reconciled with God back in September. The thing is that there was a domestic violence incident that occurred 2 years ago with my ex-boyfriend who I share a child with. The thing is that the case has been going on for 2 years, and I thought that, you know, it's good to forgive, and I forgave the person. Since I couldn't have communication with those 2 years, right, I couldn't, you know, talk about the situation, what occurred. And when I not confront, like, you know, start, like, cursing at each other and stuff like that. No, when I confronted the person to say, if this incident happened, right, that this didn't happen, the person would tell me that, oh, forgive and forget, the past is the past, all that matters now is the present, and that, you know, if Jesus forgave me, why can't you forgive me? Well, you know, I asked detailed questions because the way the district attorney's office was telling me, you know, going through details, I thought, you know, to reconcile or, you know, to forgive is to, you know, come clean, you know, confess to each other's sins. But the person to this day has told me that none of that happened, that it was the devil, that we were both in the world, and pretty much deny the reality. Was implying, where's the evidence? And I've been flip-flopping with the district attorney's office because I get the whole mantra of forgive, forget, and reconcile, you know, love your enemies, turn the other cheek away, you know, all of this, like the scripture in the church. And it's just really, I'm in a really difficult position because I've always been indecisive. I don't like to speak up. I don't, you know, I don't want to. At first, it was very, with a lot of hatred. I let go of all that bitterness and all of the angriness. And now I see the person as a broken person, right? But
Erica,
I'm very conflicted and
there, in the essence of time, let's get to we'll get an answer. I just want to clarify one thing. The person who you have the charges against, is it your child's father?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Alice, Chris, how do you want to start?
Erica, I understand your desire to do God's will in this, and I respect that. Forgetting harm perpetrated against us is not biblical. There's a reason why God gives us in part this ability to remember these things. It's to keep us safe so that we can make decisions about how close we get to people who are denying the harm they caused. Forgiveness and reconciliation are two different processes. It's right to forgive, and you can do that on your own no matter what the father of your child does. But reconciling is a decision that he's becoming a safe person, and so you're letting your guard down and you're getting close to him again. But he's giving you evidence of the opposite. He's denying. It doesn't sound like he's doing any of the character work he needs to do to become safe. Dropping charges against him might actually endanger you and your child, because the system, the point of it, the judicial system, is to attempt to hold someone like him accountable and to require that he comply with doing work to become a safe man. And so when we save a person like this from the consequences of his behavior, the most likely thing is that he will perpetrate again. It's a huge red flag that he's denying that he ever did this. He's really good at taking a little bit of truth. Some of the things he says have truth in them, and he's using that bit of truth to manipulate and to try to draw you in prematurely.
That's right.
And one of the things, I'm sorry to cut you guys off, one of the things that, you know, I tried, at first it was a lot of, oh, get even, right? That was my train of thought, but then I thought, then I changed as soon as I started to get closer to God these past few months. And one of the things that, you know, that hit me is that, you know, there was trying to be like a plea bargain, like, okay, if this person can get evaluated for, you know,
Erica, let me just jump in, because you're confused, and we need to right, and that's okay, because this is a very hard and overwhelming and confusing situation, and you're right to acknowledge that the emotions and the motivation may have clouded the decision. So let's make the decision clear. We are holding harmful behavior accountable, period. End of story. So that we can protect the safety of vulnerable people, period. That's what we're doing here. This isn't about you being right or wrong or having a great motivation or a poor motivation. And this isn't even about where he's at today or not today. Because he said something that I think is, it sounds right, but it's a lie. And here's the lie. Well, the history is the history and the present is the present. I'm sorry, life doesn't work that way. Our history is our present. And that's just another way of saying, well, what I did yesterday, I won't do tomorrow. Huh? Tell me the proof of that. Show me the proof of that. Right? So again, reconciliation, as Alice was saying, is about changed behavior over time. You can't change a behavior you don't own and acknowledge. And if he doesn't have ownership and acknowledgement over this past poor behavior, I can guarantee you he hasn't made much progress over change on it.
Yes, and the thing is, we have a lengthy relationship where I was 14 when I met him.
How old was he? Hold on, how old was he when he met you?
So he told me that he was 17, but then I was told that he was actually older.
Erica, he can't even be honest about his age. This is a dangerous person. Mm-hmm. You're giving us more and more and more evidence to say that you should not drop these charges. And let me tell you, this is hard to hear, but it's not primarily about you. It's primarily about a dangerous person harming more people in the world.
Yeah. But can I ask you, so because he's been my next door neighbor since I was 14, and we go to the same church, it's a very conservative church. I have nothing against my church, but the whole sermon that I hear a lot is, you know, forgive and forget.
Erica, we're running out of time. I deal with church abuse all the time. That is an abusive message. That's also not a safe community. And I don't mind saying it for what it is. Erica, you need safety. Your child needs safety. And therefore, they need protection against dangerous and harmful people and behavior.
Yes, we will get you connected with a therapist in your area. We'll get you connected with a group because I think that's going to be your next step forward. You're doing the right thing by correcting a wrong by pressing charges. It's hard sometimes when we have to make those tough choices. Thank you, Alice. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Liz.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.